Delighted to be your host again today. You know, we've made a commitment to bring value to you every week. It's an answer to a prayer I do daily. It goes like this. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, that's the banner, that's the goal, that's the mission, and each week bringing you something of value. And we want to pause to say thank you to our sponsor, AdvancedLiving.com, home of the comfort technology. Check out AdvancedLiving.com. You'll see this little thing that people call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, because when you plug it in, it's been specially modified to create a harmonizing energy that mitigates the stress of being in our high-tech electric world. And there's bunches of doctors and celebrities that have been using it for years. It's been around since the 80s. So check out AdvancedLiving.com and the comfort technology. We'll keep the show on the air. And now, are we ready for a treat today? You know, the number of people that are dealing with cancer, and it keeps getting worse. And there's the war against cancer, and there's the breast cancer and this cancer, and we lost Steve Jobs, a very creative man with, I believe, pancreatic cancer recently. And then you think, oh my gosh, there are a few survivors. Well, what if actually there were the methods, there was the knowledge that has been there for a long time, years, 40, 50, 60 plus years, that we didn't have to deal with the cancer in the same way we've been dealing with it, that it could actually be effectively treated. Yes, I mean, wouldn't that be just amazing? Some of you may have heard about this. Well, more and more energy is being put forward into getting this word out there. It has been suppressed, and we've been oppressed by being denied this. And we have an amazing, amazing fine gentleman that came originally from, yes, our neighbor across the pond in jolly old England. And we call him Dr. Keith. And when you look on his website, oh my gosh, a highly credentialed medical doctor, surgeon. And he has graduated and qualified as a doctor back in 1970. And he later obtained an international MD and PhD at the Open International University for Complementary Medicine. And Dr. Keith has been at the forefront of advances in medicine for almost 40 years, and he was among the original pioneers of the clinical ecology movement. And in the 1980s, he made medical legal history when a UK, you know, United Kingdom Crown Court accepted his evidence that food allergy could make a youth murderously violent. I mean, we've been allergic to things, you know, I've been allergic to a lot of politicians, you know, some people are this, but I mean, honestly, folks, this is a major breakthrough to know that he actually got this in the High Court of England. He's been dubbed the world's number one allergy detective, and he's written many books on alternative and complementary medicine, including cancer research studies, how to survive in a world without antibiotics. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It can be done. Virtual medicine and diet-wise. And he's advisory member to several boards, including What Doctors Don't Tell You and the Society for Homotoxicology in the UK. And Dr. Keith now resides in California and writes, publishes, and teaches all over the world. And he's respected for his scientific approach to medical alternatives. He is known as a truth teller rather than serving self-interest or medical pharmaceutical interest. And he's an excellent person to listen. So strap yourselves in, get ready, and let's welcome Dr. Keith. Hello.
Kenneth, hello. What a pleasure to be with you. Oh, my, what an awesome-sounding bio. Thank you very much.
Oh,
I feel like saying kind of, oh, shucks, you know. But
yeah.
Anyway, you know, modesty is an English thing. It's not an American thing.
Okay, well, you certainly are welcome to be as modest as you want. The main thing that we're so excited about is all the time and effort that you've put into researching and studying and gaining the credentials so that you could stand not just in front of us, my listeners and I today, but in front of people all over the world and begin to bring out important information that has been suppressed. For this cancer, if I'm understanding correctly, it's going to be affecting about 1 in 2 men and maybe that many women in our country. So that's like 50-50 odds that we're going to come down with cancer. And you have a slogan that we're all battling cancer.
We're all battling cancer. Either you or a loved one's going to get it. And, you know, I liken this to playing Russian roulette with 3 bullets in the gun. I mean, it's kind of scary with 1 bullet in a chamber of 6, but with 3 bullets in the gun, it becomes a very silly game. So people, you know, they have to know this stuff. There's no point in ducking it. And, you know, as I keep saying to people, don't wait until the axe falls and then start Googling, you know. There's so much you can do to beat off cancer. We shouldn't get cancer, Ken. You know that. What we are accustomed to calling primitive societies, let's call them simpler societies anyway, it's virtually an unknown disease. You know, a guy from Harvard University went and lived with Eskimos about 150 years ago. He spent 30 years living with the Ainu, and he never saw a single case of cancer. And their diet was loaded in fat. You know, it was about 40-50% fat. And it's the same in Africa. Albert Schweitzer noticed the same thing in the Gabon. Nobody ever got cancer. You know, so it's not a given. It's a disease of Western civilization. And so it can be beaten. You know, if you don't follow the full pattern of Western civilization, you can beat it. And I think you're right to make sure that your listeners, you know, get as well educated as they can. Because I have a saying, the commonest cause of death is ignorance.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
It covers everything.
Yeah. I'm going to hear that. Say that again.
Well, the commonest cause of death, the number one cause of death is ignorance.
Okay.
People are missing something. They don't know their diet's stupid, or they don't care, or they don't know about this remedy or that remedy, and so they don't use it, and so on. You have to be informed. And, you know, that's the whole movement. You're spearheading it, Kenneth. You know,
we have to
take care of our own health. It's no good giving it over to doctors. They don't understand health anyway. They barely understand disease, but they don't work in the health model at all. They work in the sick and busted model, which is no good.
Ah, yeah, and that's an important point that you're making. It's not the education is not preventative. It's like when your car breaks down and you take it to a mechanic, fix it, versus sometimes we do things for preventive maintenance for our cars. Okay, let's change the oil, let's do this, let's change the air filter. But now you're saying, well, we got to treat ourselves with preventive maintenance.
Absolutely. I mean, the cost of sickness medicine now, especially in the U.S., is just way too high. And as you know, the current government is trying to change all that, and it could get worse. It likely will. That, you know, there won't be such free access to things, but it can't go on spiraling as it is anyway. Listen, I don't want to do the politics, but I do want to say that people shouldn't get sick. You know, almost all sickness is preventable. And there's a big difference, Kenneth, between people in the alternative field and orthodox doctors. And I am a qualified orthodox doctor, as you said. I'm actually a surgeon. You know, I've had my hand inside people's guts and so on. But their model is that, you know, when disease or sickness strikes, something is busted, something has gone wrong. In the holistic field, we believe that nature can heal anything. You know, if you break an arm, it heals. If you cut yourself with a knife, you lacerate the skin, it'll heal. You just hold the edges to bits, and it will fix itself pretty quick, actually. Nature is a wonderful healer, so anything that isn't healing itself, there has to be an impediment. And if you find and remove the impediment, nature does the job just fine. And, you know, I have a saying, doctors and practitioners of all kinds don't really heal anything. It's nature that heals. The best we can do is set the stage. And it's a whole different philosophy, and actually a much more exciting philosophy, than thinking of people as, you know, finished and busted and they need these drugs for the rest of their days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's great. That model is wonderful if you happen to have stock in a pharmaceutical company, because then you'll have lots of customers buying drugs until they pass on, and then of course they've trained their children that taking drugs is the way to go. But thank God people like you are here to remind us it doesn't have to be that way.
Thank goodness. Yeah, you know, it's well, listen, it's all, everyone is happier when they're healthier, aren't they? You know, sickness is taken so much as a given here now. I hear some terrifying statistics from your country that over the age of 65, the average meds that somebody's on is 8 meds. That's an average. Now, I don't take any, so that means somebody's taking 16 meds to make it for people like me. Uh-oh. Can you believe that? And the attitude here seems to be, well, you know, the antidepressant isn't working, so let's try another one at the same time.
Yes.
Now, in Britain, forgive us, but, you know, we used to say, well, this stuff isn't working, it's crap, we'll throw it out and try another one, right? But here they say, well, that's not working, so let's add in another one, and then we'll add in another one, and none of which are working anyway. It's really quite frightening. So you get into this very complex polypharmaceuticals, and nobody knows. You can't kid me that anyone, the world's leading expert, can possibly keep up with the interactions of 6, 8, or 10 drugs at once. We just don't know the dynamic. But I do know it's pretty risky. And I do know that a lot more people die here every year, Kenneth, than died in the entire Vietnam War. So that's a pretty sobering statistic, isn't it, if you think about it?
Yeah, there's a fella, Burton Goldberg, that's...
I know Burton, he's down here in Southern California, isn't he?
Okay, yeah, put together a movie talking about this stuff. I think the term, most of us, it was new to me when I heard it, iatrogenic illness. Goes into a hospital. Well, explain that, would you?
Well, that's one of those fancy, let me explain the word first of all, iatrogenic, one of those fancy Greek words. You know, doctors and scientists don't like using English when they can dig up some fancy, crazy Greek or Latin word. Iatros is just Greek for doctor, so you meet it in the word psych iatros, meaning a doctor of the mind and so on. So iatrogenic means created by doctors. Now, here's the scare. You know, we know doctors, you know, make mistakes. They leave a swab in the wound and, people die. It's one of those things. You know, if your mechanic makes a mistake, your car suffers. But in this particular field, a person may die. But you can't legislate against mistakes. You know, they do happen. But the scary part, kind of the really scary part, is over 100,000 people a year die of the correct medication at the correct dose. It was not a mistake. It's just that the stuff, you know, just killed the person. Now, the reason for that is that we're not all the same. This is another difference between holistic medicine and orthodox medicine. Orthodox medicine likes to average out everybody. We're all an average. You know, this is to do with using statistics and things. In actual fact, nobody's average. so they try and work on an average dose for the average person, and this is what they should take. But some people are not like that. Their livers and their metabolism cannot handle chemicals hardly at all, and so they're not able to detox, and they very rapidly build up toxic levels, and it can be fatal. And the doctor stands around like a dummy scratching his head and says, well, I don't understand it. He just had the normal dose. But, you know, if that person can't cope with it, the normal dose can be absolutely lethal. And this is what's happening in medicine, especially when you start putting them together, like I was saying, 6, 8, or 10 at once. It's just a lottery. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Wow. Yeah, that's I've worked with some people doing some personal coaching, and they would be taking some different meds for getting off of drugs or dealing with depression or anxiety, and Prozac, there's a whole bunch that are in the Prozac kind of category.
Those serotonin ones, yeah.
And they would change the medication and from time to time, and it would take the person 2-3 weeks to adapt to a change in the medication.
Right. And in that 2 or 3 weeks, that person is at risk of running out to the local mall and gunning down 20 or 30 people, you know?
Yeah.
People get very upset and disturbed psychologically when you start messing with the brain. And if you watch the news, almost all of these dramatic, tragic stories are somebody who's a psychiatric case, he's on meds, and the poor guy, or gal, it's usually a guy, isn't it, but just not responsible for themselves. They can't think straight. And what kind of living is that, you know? You can't think straight. It's almost better to be depressed and be able to think things through than to be not able to think at all.
Yeah. And what is pretty exciting, you've put together this book that we can go to, I believe, is it cancerresearchsecrets.com?
That's right, Cancer Research Secrets, all one word, no, dr-dashes.com. Can I maybe just plug my main information site, too? There's nothing for sale up there, just thousands of pages of information. Can I, alternative-doctor.com, and that's D-O-C-T-O-R, spelled in full, alternative-doctor.com. And for this book, we're talking about cancerresearchsecrets.com. And, of course, as you rightly pointed out at the top of the talk, a lot of this stuff is secret. It's suppressed. People aren't supposed to know. In fact, in California, it's quite dangerous to say and do certain things around the subject of cancer. You could end up in jail, you know. The orthodoxy has got such a stranglehold that it's considered the treatment, and it's the proper treatment. And anyone who talks about anything else is diverting a person from the proper treatment, and ergo is a criminal. Even information is being criminalized in parts of the USA. You know, it's really kind of scary. Because I believe, above all, the person should be in charge of their own health. You should never pass it to a doctor, but especially not to an oncologist.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. Is it the Hippocratic Oath?
Well, yeah, it's from Hippocrates, you know, the old Greek father of medicine, the original doctor guy. We call it the Hippocratic Oath. In fact, nobody's taken the Hippocratic Oath for centuries, but it's kind of written in as a given in the fabric, of which the most important clause is always quoted, the first one, which is first do no harm.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to me that the Hippocratic principle is running that good here, to be honest. You know, I gave you some figures to show what tremendous... let me take that further, because this is kind of a joke. Well, funny, not a joke.
Yeah,
funny.
Maybe when doctors
go on strike, the death rate drops. Now, this has happened in several parts of the world. It happened in Los Angeles. In the 1970s,
Wow. There
was a doctor's work to rule, and the death rate plummeted. The same was in Israel some years ago, you know, when the doctors went on strike. I got this report from an undertaker's journal. You know, things kind of went on a slow for the undertakers for a time. They weren't very happy. But, you know, when you start looking at the big picture like that, you have to be kind of a bit nervy. And, you know, one of the best, you know, I teach anti-aging as well, Kenneth, and one of the things I teach is if you want to live a long and happy life, stay away from doctors. I've got to say that. I am a doctor, but I'd like to think I'm not like the other ones. But, you know, first of all, you shouldn't need to go to them if you look after your own health. But immediately you do, you're putting your life in somebody else's hands. And it's a poor game. You know, it's better if you can keep the reins for yourself and you choose what you want to do.
Yeah. Well, with your background and you've done surgery, I don't know if you spent any time in an ICU unit or an ER unit at
Listen,
all.
Listen, you said I qualified in 1970. ICUs had only just come in right then. They were sort of real new.
Yeah.
One of the first ICUs in our city was being set up, even as I did the equivalent of my internship. So that was a long time ago. Listen, I jumped the fence very early on, Kenneth. I've been outside ever since.
Right.
Never regretted it. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry.
No. I mean, to me, I'm excited that you have that strong background and then expanded your horizons. And to me, out of respect to the medical community, I like to say, look at what it can do amazingly well, and for critical care, for acute injuries, it seems to be just totally amazing at what they can do to help pull someone out of a car accident, or they've been shot, or who knows what.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I would like to be near an ER if somebody put a couple of bullets in my chest, you know. You're absolutely right, but the majority of medicine, sadly, isn't like that. Vast majority is dealing with chronic illness. And I have a saying, you know, if somebody's taking chronic medication for years and years, it isn't working. You know, the only definition of working, well, my definition of a cure is no disease, no symptoms, and no treatment. If you're taking a treatment, then it's not really a cure. It's just kind of being treated. But if you see chronic disease in those terms, then really chronic disease is a failure, basically. It's, treatment is a failure.
Something.
I suppose we'll talk a bit about cancer, since that's what we promised your folks.
there was mention of a Swedish study in 2010 about cancer.
That's right. Now this comes from the Karolinska Institute, and they are an institute that I respect enormously, even as a holistic doctor that's outside of the orthodox paradigm. They're good folks there. They're not money oriented, you know, they're science oriented. They're not paid any more money to find this than to find that. And so they're fairly honest, and also they're willing to question things that could not be questioned here in the US. You know, they'd never dream, for example, of not treating a few cancer patients to see what happens. But you can do that in Europe. The patient has to choose, of course. I'm not saying you can by force you withdraw treatment. But anyway, this was a very fascinating study, Kenneth, which showed that if you don't do anything, quite a few cancers actually regress and recover. They will actually go away if you just leave them alone. So it's probably a bit negative to jump in there with toxins like chemotherapy and blasting with radiation. It surely is not necessary all the time. Now, that's not to say, you know, if you didn't do anything, all cancers will recover. They didn't by any means prove that, but they proved a significant number did. And certainly some of the manageable cancers, you know, like breast cancer and colon cancer, they're not, rapid and severe and absolutely deadly like lung cancer and pancreatic cancer. So don't you think that was great? I mean, that was orthodox doctors saying, well, maybe we should just, you know, watch and wait a little bit. It could change the whole oncologist story.
Because
oncologists tend to scare people to death, you know. They say, oh, my God, you know, we're just in time. We've got to it, but if we can start you on chemotherapy this afternoon, we might just pull you around, that kind of thing. Wouldn't it be nice if oncologists said, well, yeah, you've got breast cancer, but, you know, that's no big deal. Let's check it again in a couple of months and see how it's moving. And, if we need to intervene, we'll step in. Wouldn't that be different? And wouldn't that change the public perception of cancer as this terrifying thing, you know, that if you get it, it's as good as curtains, you know, you might be lucky, but probably you won't be. That's public perception.
Yeah, a diagnosis of cancer is not a death sentence.
Well, that's one of my sayings. It's not a death sentence, but it's certainly a wake-up call. That's what I say. You know, it's telling you your health is in ruins, so you've got to do something. But the point is you have the opportunity to do something, and if you make significant changes, and in this book, I've covered three or four of the absolute keynote changes that you must make, three particularly. One is you must change your diet. There isn't any question that cancer is 50% or more a dietary nutritional thing. Remember what I said about the Eskimos and the African natives in the Gabon and so on? Cancer was unknown until they got westernized. got the Western diet. So nutrition has to be top of the list. You also need to get rid of all the carcinogenic chemicals in your environment. All right, you can't deal with what's outside on the streets and in the local library and supermarkets and so on, but you can deal with your own home. You know, you can walk through it and clean out all the unnecessary chemicals so that you're not overloading your detox system. Our poor bodies now are suffering what I call a blizzard of chemicals. I mean, you know, it's Eskimo mothers way up in the north in the Arctic snows are breastfeeding their babies with milk that contains pesticides and pollutants. It's horrific, Kenneth. It's everywhere on Earth, and people don't realize. You know, I think that's the main reason that cancer is on the rise. I mean, poor diet's part of it, but the main reason we've reached this horrifying 1 in 2 level is because of this chemical overload situation we're in. And the third big pillar is emotional healing. Now, this isn't comfortable for many. And I've heard people, for example, like Charlotte Gerson say, it's not relevant. Trust me, it is totally relevant. That people who get cancer usually have some kind of psychic shock or trauma in the 2 or 3 years leading up to the tumor. And there's also, I'm sure you've read or heard, there's a kind of personality type. Typically a woman who's, you know, very docile, submissive, and puts her needs behind everybody else's and so on. That kind of person is more likely to get a cancer, and it's not just purely a genetic thing, more likely to get a cancer than somebody who's very feisty and, you know, walks about stamping her feet and saying, no way. And that spills over into treatments too. You know, Bernie Siegel, a famous humanistic oncologist, if that's not an oxymoron. Mm-hmm. I just made it up. But anyway, I think he's a humanistic oncologist. But he said, you know, the ones that won't do exactly what you tell them are more likely to survive than those that are very submissive and do everything the doctor says without fighting back. So, personality and character and psychological makeup, these are all terrifically significant factors.
Ah.
So they have to be addressed. You know, if you want to survive, listen, I say to people, if you do one of these, you're going to probably do okay anyway. But if you do all three, you're practically guaranteeing a recovery. You know, change your whole lifestyle, change what you eat and drink and how you behave and how you think and all of your surroundings with the chemicals. That's a pretty drastic change. It virtually amounts to a sort of career move. I do warn people, you know, when they've got cancer, you could beat it, but, you know, you've got to take it seriously. It's almost like a new career now for the next few months or years until you're sure you've beaten it. But you need to take it that seriously. It's a heavy card to pull, isn't it? So, but it's survivable. That's the best part. It is very survivable, with or without chemo.
Yeah. Well, I like hearing what you say because in a way, when you call it a wake-up call, to me, that's a huge reframe because you're saying, when we listen to you, and you're a trained doctor with 40 years experience in this stuff, it's like instead of, oh, you've got a death sentence, it's like, you've ignored things and you've done things in a way that aren't in your best interest, but not to worry. Now you've got the wake-up call. Here's the prescription in terms of lifestyle changes that are going to help you to regain control over your life and your health.
That's right. Well, you know, some people even get as far as kind of blessing the fact they got cancer. You know, it pulled them round, and they've done extremely well after. Listen, I've got to tell you, you know the way doctors often say, oh, you won't last 6 months, put your affairs in order.
Yeah.
They should stop saying that because it's really just a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I had dinner with a friend a few weeks ago. She told me a great story about an oncologist had said that, you know, you're not going to last 6 months. The patient's still alive and kicking 20-odd years later, and the doctor's long dead.
Oh.
I think that's rather funny. But, you know, sorry, I just hit my mic. You probably heard a horrible...
Oh, that's okay.
But that's kind of funny.
Yeah. There's an irony to that. When they make a pronouncement, especially... What I was told by some doctors is they are well trained in medical school on how to take on a persona that is one of great authority. So when they're making a pronouncement to someone, it's not just a little off the cuff, well, you know, hey, this stuff is going on, you know, we think this stuff. It's like from God on Almighty speaking from the heavens, and the clouds open up and the voice says, you've got 6 months to live, or this is inoperable. Go home and get your life in order, and, you know, because you're not going to make it another 2 weeks. I mean, this is, to me, a gross injustice to make those kind of pronouncements.
Yeah. First of all, it's very stupid because they're wrong so often. You know, I mean, I told you a funny story, but, you know, it happens all the time that they say you're not going to survive and the patient does. So you'd think it just sounds kind of stupid and they'd stop it for that reason. But surely they know there's this element of self-fulfilling prophecy from an authoritarian source. So I think it's kind of cruel and mean. And, of course, they get a smug satisfaction when the patient dies at 5 3/4 months. See, I was right, I knew. But it's really only fulfilling what they laid out for themselves in the first place.
The power of the mind, if that stuff is told to someone with a very submissive personality, they could just take it as fact and actually make it happen.
Right. You know the bell curve spread, don't you? I mean, how we use that in science and in society now. But there's always this 10% at the bottom of the curve, just do everything they're told and just fall in with everything. And then the top end, there's another 10% that won't do anything they're told. They won't listen. They're completely off the wall. Those are the people that do well, as I was saying. You know, they just say, oh, screw you. What do you mean? I've got 6 months to live, you know. Get out of here. I'm not coming back. That kind of person tends to do very well. And good luck to them. I'm glad for them.
Yeah. Well, now I'm wondering, because you'd made mention in these three pillars of cancer healing, the nutrition, the chemical detox, and the emotional cleansing. Are you able to share a tidbit or two, for instance, a little bit of nutritional advice or something about what we can do for chemical detox or some of the emotional cleansings that the listeners could take with them on the show today?
Yeah, yes, a bit of take home. Well, the first thing is diet. And obviously, I mean, folks have heard this 1,000 times, so they'll have to hear it at least one more time, which is that you can't afford to eat manufactured food. It's had all the goodness taken out of it, you know, we say vitiated, that's the scientific word. It's just turned into fluff and nothing. So you're not going to get your nutrition from that. You can't fight health and build health with non-nutrition. You need quality nutrition. So the first thing is to get rid of stuff, right, rather than what you add in. But we know that there are lots of antioxidants and enzymes in fresh foods. So the emphasis has got to go in that direction. Antioxidants tend to be the brightly colored foods, you know, the red foods, the blue foods, the green foods, and so on. Some people say no meat. I don't think the no meat is important. That's a little bit of a myth that's got going. All the studies I've ever seen only ever seem to study meat in conjunction with processed and manufactured meat, you know, like ham and Spam and all that garbage. So it kind of skews the figures. But, you know, if you're worried about the figures, then stick with fish and chicken. But basically, what I teach you for a person is to think of the caveman diet, our natural, traditional diet, you know, the one that I was talking about, the folks that follow that diet, they eat fruit and roots and, you know, berries and vegetables, occasionally catch some meat and occasionally catch some fish. And that sort of hunter-gatherer diet seems to suit us very well. I don't think there are very good statistics that vegetarianism is curative, although vegetarians tend to get less cancer. They often boast that. I tend to think that's more because they take care of themselves. You know, they're fussy. They take supplements. They eat properly. They like whole foods. And so these things do them good rather than the actual giving up meat part, I think. But then there are one or two very striking and very significant types of diet that I wouldn't recommend these for anyone who doesn't, you know, isn't worried about cancer. It's either in their family or they've already been diagnosed. The Gerson diet, for example, Max Gerson made it famous. His daughter Charlotte is carrying it on. But, you know, it's pretty heroic. I mean, you practically need a full-time assistant. You're juicing 3 times a day and taking coffee enemas and, you know, smoothies and all these kind of things. It's a very, very heavy program. And although it's successful, I've got my suspicion, Kenneth. It's because it filters out people who aren't determined. You know, you've got to be pretty determined. Maybe there's a certain type of person who will put up with the Gerson diet and the others won't.
So
that could be a good point. A milder one is called the Budvig diet. This is from a German lass called Joanna Budvig. I mean, say lass, she was an old lady then and she's long dead, but she left us a legacy, and she's very big into omega-3s and flaxseed oil. She says take it with cottage cheese. Got some reservations about that being a dairy product, but what she's really after is the sulfur, so you could just as easily take it with egg. But anyway, the big thing is the omega-3s and what we call pi electrons. These, if you take this cottage cheese and flaxseed oil stuff, it's practically like it eats the cancer. It's really strange. You munch this stuff away and it seems to munch the tumor for you. I've seen some very, very striking results with that one. So there's a whole bunch of those, so I'm not going to go into them all, but there are sort of specific cancer
diets. Yeah, and those are things that are listed in your book, right?
Right. Well, if you're fighting cancer, then you need that book, because that book is about the only objective look at everything, just about everything. And I'm not scared of saying this is nonsense, there's no science, and it doesn't work, and I've never seen it help anybody. Because you know what's out there, don't you, Ken? I mean, the internet is full of people doing testimonials. Oh, well, I took XYZ stuff, and it cured me. And there's never any science behind that. You don't know what else did they do. Did they change their diet at the same time? Were they using oxygen therapies? Did they exercise more? All these other things, that could have been a part of the thing, and they just pick on one thing, like Lee trial or whatever, and say, that was it. That's what cured me. And it's usually not that simple. Science isn't simple, even if you're honest. But if it gets muddied up with slightly dishonest scientists on an agenda, then it gets very muddy.
Yeah.
But anyway, as I said, so nutrition is a deep, deep thing here, Kenneth. It's beyond just a radio chat, perhaps. But to say it's very, very important. And of course, it's the easiest. You can always change what you're eating. All you have to do is change what you buy at the store. within 2 days, you're on the new program. The chemical detox is harder, but for 30-odd years, I've had a very simple thing, which I call the Mumby nose test, and it's simply this. If you can smell it, if there's enough to smell, there's enough to cause symptoms. Okay, so you go through the house and smell, and you throw out the scents and the perfumes and the bathroom cleaners and the funny soaps and the air fresheners. None of these you need, okay? Now, the girls, I know, need a little bit of makeup. We've got to acknowledge that. Even fighting cancer, most girls I know wouldn't give up makeup completely. But, you can modify it, and you need to know. There's all these things in cosmetics like sodium lauryl sulfate and parabens and these things that we know are notoriously carcinogenic. So, out they go. Try and find the holistic alternatives to hair dyes and toothpaste and things. The emotional thing, you simply have to have a very good practitioner, and it's one of two types, Kenneth. One is a person who's good at historic work. In other words, if you somebody died and you're grieving, they can take you back and they can release that. The other type of person is the spiritual healer that seems to be able to sort of reach a bit deeper into that emotional plane. And they come out with things like, all of this is really just, you're missing love. You've been on this search for love and you've had this sort of negative impact on your life. And, they get results. I have another, I've got all sorts of cute sayings, I've got to tell you, Kenneth, but another one I have, which I use a lot, is that the person gets to make the diagnosis who makes the cure. In other words, if you fix the condition, you were probably right about what you said the problem was. So, if you go and see a spiritual healer and she says, it's lack of love, and then, warms up your life with love and your tumor goes into regression, then you've got to believe that person was probably right then.
Yeah.
And you don't worry about the genetics, saying, it's all just genes. The person who fixes it is the best person to know what the problem really was. And, I've seen so many of those. I think I'd have a good diet anyway, so if, God forbid, I ever got diagnosed with cancer, I think I'd go straight to one of those kind of healers, that can look deeply into the sort of, they call it the etheric and stuff, but, just a little bit behind the personal history thing, into the deep energetic and the void and the spirit and the whole being and the meaning of life. If that gets disturbed, everything else gets disturbed. It's like a cascade downwards. And that fits with science. It's not just spiritual and woo-woo. it fits with science. You know, in my lifetime, science has changed from thinking it's all physical to believing it's practically, certainly all energy now. Carlo Rubbia, he was the Nobel laureate for physics in 1984, said only 1/1,000,000th, that's with a B, 1/1,000,000th of the universe is matter and stuff. Everything else is energy and information. And that's really the way science has gone now. So, you know, the information field creates the energetic field, which creates the physical reality. So it only makes sense, doesn't it, if you go upstream far enough and start switching around the information fields that are disturbing things and causing sickness, that the cascade will come down with better energies and therefore better physical health. All these models, you know, seem to work time and time again, and I know they're very valuable. And they're the ones I would go for. You know, I'd never think of going for chemo or that stuff. You know, but having said that, and I want to say this to your listeners, I always respect a person's choice if they want to do that. And I've taken hundreds of patients down that path. You know, they were too scared. They thought, well, you know, I'll try and hedge my bets because what if you alternative holistic people are wrong, you know, and the oncologist said I need this stuff. I think it's a person's right to do that if they want. And then we use the holistic therapies to protect them from the ravages of chemo.
Yeah.
You've seen that, you know, when somebody goes on chemo, they lose their hair, they look ghastly, they're sick, they're vomiting, get diarrhea. I've had patients, hundreds of patients, where they didn't get any of these things, but the chemo worked for them, so they did, you know, they did rather well. It's like they got the good side of chemo, but didn't get all the horrible negatives that go with it.
Yeah.
And that has to be a person's choice. It's a fashion that I'm sure you're aware of to sort of deride people who want to go that route as if they were want to go that route. They're scolded as some kind of idiot. You know, why would you do that? But, you know, there are 12 million people alive in the USA today that had chemo. You know, that's got to mean something. Some of them sometimes survive.
Sure.
If a person wants to do that, let them do it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, the field is so extensive. When I was living in Southern California, Dr. Scott Robinson introduced me to a couple of holistic medical doctors in Oceanside, Dr. Winkler and Dr. Brightman. And they have the Southern California alternative cancer treatment thing. And they studied from doctors in Mexico what it's called insulin potentiated therapy.
Oh, yes, IPT. Yes, that's in the book, of course. That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Go on, finish.
They've been going crazy because they've used this the insulin-potentiated therapy to do chemotherapy that doesn't harm the body. It just goes after the cancer.
Right.
And
another one, naltrexone, that does that too, that seems to sensitize the tumor. And there's an old traditional remedy from Europe called Ukraine, which is based on the greater celandine plant called chelidonium, wonderful herb. But they mix that with thiotepa, which is one of the oldest chemos there is. The point of these therapies is if you take something alongside it, you can get away with a quarter or a fifth of the amount of chemo, so it's not so toxic, but still knocks out the cancer cell. I mean, that's got to be a smart way to go, hasn't it?
Yeah. So I'm glad that's, you know, one more thing in your book, and that's to remind the listeners again, the website cancerresearchsecrets.com.
Yeah, secrets plural.
Oh, okay.
Because there are lots of them in that book, as you've seen.
Yeah, what is it, about 300 pages of the...
Yep, close on. You know, jam-packed with information from somebody who's done almost all of it clinically. You know, there are people who pick up, like the people who want to write about insulin-potentiated desensitization and things like that. So you'd think, you know, it was the only thing that worked. That's what they write about, that's what they do. It's the old story, you know, if you've only got a hammer, then everything starts to look like a nail. But, you know, I've done almost all of these things, and I'm familiar with all of them. And so I can lay, and I'm not seeking patients, you know, I'm long retired, so I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm just trying to pass on the information, and I think that's what makes my book a particularly good deal. You know, it's loaded with what people are looking for.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, when you get cancer, it's scary, isn't it? I mean, people are frightened, and they want information, and they go on the net, and there's this torrent of stuff that's so confusing and contradictory. I think you need a good, steady source from somebody who really has tested the field and sort of done it all. I've test-driven the stuff, so I know what I'm talking about.
Right. That to me is just one reason that I want people to be grateful that they can turn to you and go to either cancerresearchsecrets.com or the other one, alternative-doctor.com. For
yep,
even
they
more
can always start there. That will lead them into a pathway amongst my writings as well.
Ah, and it's been interesting too. I went to a chiropractor, and he would have his patients, me as one of them, and others. We would use an oxygen concentrator and get on a treadmill or on a vibrating platform, and he said that was, you know, helpful to oxygenate the body, and you've got some important information about how that ties in to cancer and what glycolysis and other stuff.
Right, I'm glad you brought it up, actually, because just in the last little minute or two, that was our promise, wasn't it? The wonderful, you know, the new view that could revolutionize all this. We do know that cancer cells don't like oxygen, so oxygen kills cancer cells. They use an alternative pathway for metabolizing sugar. So, if you get, and it's not very efficient. So, if you eat a sugary diet, you're helping the cancer cells indirectly. Oxygen is very good, but what's been realized, and this is a proposal from a man called Michael Lasanti, a U.S. MD and a very wise guy, and he's gathered a lot of evidence, is that what's actually happening is that the glycolysis is taking place not so much in the cancer cells as in the surrounding cells. You know, I have to say to this to people, in a tumor, only about half the cells are cancer cells. The rest of your own body, you know, trying to grapple with the problem, with the intruder. So it's these other cells that may well be doing the glycolysis pathway and indirectly feeding the cancer, you know, on its behalf. If so, this is going to completely change the treatment. The facts about oxygen, I was saying, were awarded a Nobel Prize back in 1931, so nobody argues with that. It was a man called Otto Warburg, and it's called the Warburg effect. But this man, Michael Lasanti, he's calling it the reverse Warburg, which I think is kind of cute. But it plays to the same principle, which is that lack of oxygen is very critical in this fight, and having lots of oxygen is very good. And also, it's why antioxidants are so important to us. If you don't have enough antioxidants, then cancer cells are able to deliberately kill the surrounding tissues, and it's those dying tissues that release the glycolysis products and feed the cancer cell. It's a very persuasive model, and as I said, there's lots of evidence now to support that as being true. I hope it wasn't too technical, and we didn't have that much time for it, but I'm sure your listeners will be very interested. Otto
yes.
Warburg was a fascinating character, a German scientist, and he was 50 years ahead of everybody else in his thinking. But it's one of those things, you know, that eventually orthodox medicine has got the message, and it's now pretty widely accepted amongst orthodox doctors.
Ah.
Just unfortunate, there has to be a 50-year delay.
yeah, it takes, it's an uphill thing at this point in time when the main information sources are there supporting the medical pharmaceutical industry versus getting this important information out, because if that was done, people would have this information and know it within months.
Right.
Instead
well,
of
you know, they
years.
Have to suppress it, otherwise they can't keep up some of the, well, it's almost a circus, a pantomime, the way they're going about things, but a very ominous and sinister one. But, you know, it's back to what I said early on. It comes down to ignorance, Kenneth. If you know your stuff and know what to do, you can drive your own vehicle, and you should never let a doctor drive your own health vehicle. They don't understand health. They don't that much understand disease, but absolutely, they don't understand you and your lifestyle. You are unique. So you have to be able to integrate and adapt all this. Who better?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And let's see, as we've got, maybe 3 or 4 minutes to go, I wanted to also check in, because in your book there's some the range of different therapies, Rife machine, some stuff, it's the James Beard enzyme
therapy.
Yes,
well, shall I just spend a couple of minutes on those two, because those in themselves are very fascinating. Just a quick couple of minutes on each. James Beard goes right back to the beginning of the 20th century. He was a Scottish biologist who realized that the what's called a trophoblast. Now, it sounds technical, but it just means the bit of the placenta that eats into the womb. It buries itself in the womb so that it can then nurture the baby, the fetus. He noticed that process looked awfully like the way that cancer eats into tissues. And he also noticed it all stops when the fetus's pancreas starts to work. It's about 6 or 8 weeks. And he put two and two together, long story short, and he realized that if you feed pancreatic enzymes, you can make the tumor go away. It's kind of that switch-off signal. And pancreatic enzymes, anyway, are digestive and will tend to digest away the tumor. Well, you know, Kenneth, that was so successful that there were 40 or 50 clinics in England alone doing that particular therapy. What went wrong? And it still works, and it's still very safe. It's still very valid. Nothing's 100%, but it's a very successful treatment. But, you know, what went wrong with that was that Marie Curie came out with her radiotherapy, and so Beard's enzyme therapy was just dumped. You know, we don't need that now. We've got radium treatment. We can do radiotherapy. It's totally safe, and it knocks out the cancer. And, of course, it took us many decades to realize it's not safe at all. It's a very dangerous way.
Yeah, if Madame Curie could speak from the grave, she'd say, oh, wait just a moment. I think I went too fast on this.
Well, of course, it's another version, I suppose, of ignorance equals death.
There you go.
The other one you mentioned is the Rife machine, and that's got to be one of the most dramatic, romantic, and amazing scientific stories of all time. And, you know, the story still isn't finished. It's illegal practically to talk about the Rife machine here in the USA, but it was a wonderful discovery by a man who wasn't a doctor, but he built the most amazing microscope just about ever built in the days before. Well, it's still the most amazing, because electron microscopes may magnify more, but you have to have dead tissue. You can't see anything living going on at high magnification. With his brilliant optical microscope, he could see living things, and he looked at blood, and he saw these weird little bodies, little creepy crawly things running around in the blood with people that had cancer. He connected that with the fact that if you blasted a sample with some radio frequencies, it would kill these little things and then the cancer would go away. Okay, well, that's the story in a nutshell. He's got to be just about the unluckiest man of all time, I think. He came out with it. It's a radio frequency thing. The actual frequencies are about 1.6 megahertz that kill this sort of proto-cancerous little organism. But it happens to be in the AM band, and it was almost a few years before the FTC came out with regulations about who could and couldn't broadcast, and so that caused them problems. It was great for killing microorganisms, too, but the equipment was very expensive. It was several thousand dollars back in the 1930s. And again, just around the corner, less than a couple of years, were the beginnings of the antibiotic era, where it was just pennies on the dollar to treat a patient with a serious illness. So once again, a good idea and a good breakthrough idea got trashed by what appeared to be better, cheaper, and faster developments that came along behind them, and they were shelved. But these later developments have found to be, in some ways, quite negative. You know, they weren't that good, but nobody's gone back to revive the original treatment. There are lots of people professing to sell the Rife machine, but they don't really know what the Rife machine exactly did. There's been one or two keynote researchers that have made breakthroughs in that just in the last 24 months.
Oh.
But, you know, it's not about to come back anytime soon, because the FDA has got a huge down on it. They will jail anybody that's selling a Rife machine. It's become clandestine technology, even though I can tell you, hand on heart, and as a scientist, I know it works, and I've seen it do it. But in the USA, you can't have it. You're not permitted. And what the machines that you're likely to get anywhere on the Internet or through the post are not really rife machines. They don't have the right technology.
Ah, well, that's important to know. This to me is just so exciting that you've put in all this time. I mean, traditional medical studies, surgery, on into all these years of alternative, and now we have available to us this book at Cancer Research Secrets, so that we can really look into getting a lot of detail about things and not just follow the latest fad that some celebrity says, well, I did this, I stood on one foot and hummed the national anthem backwards, and you know, and now look, my toenails sparkle again.
Well, as I said, celebrities are notoriously bad at looking after themselves, but they often do us a disservice. You know, they will suddenly panic and dive into alternatives right at the last minute, like Steve Jobs, and it's too late. You know, he should have done it, you know, when he was first diagnosed years ago.
Oh, my gosh, we've got to wrap up, Dr. Keith.
So we have. Okay. Well, I've enjoyed talking with you, Kenneth. It's been great.
Bless you. Take care. We'll have you on again. Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Now.